Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby, and this is the H&J Daily Podcast with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, this afternoon, me and Andy obviously reflected on the Spurs-Chelsea game. He was in a slightly better mood than me, as you can appreciate. Sam Peters joined us, journalist and a concussion expert. Concussion subs will be in football in the Premier League this weekend for the first time ever. Sam explained how it's all going to work. Martin Kellner looked at a week of sport on TV and some of his favourite documentary series he's been taking in. And Mike Ward talked a bit of Brighton and looked at the non-sporting TV. I mean, there's so much sport, but if you do fancy a break, hopefully Mike marked your card. Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Paul. One of us was going to have a moan today, weren't we?
Yes. Well, sure, I congratulate you, on that victory. It should have been a bit more comfortable. You shouldn't have been sitting there on the edge of your seat thinking that Vinicius header should go in because, you know, you were a bit profligate at times. You know, good opportunities wasted, and you could have been.
I wonder who that was.
You could have been 3-0 up.
Your best defender, Werner. Yeah. I decided last night, his pace and movement, that's what won him the penalty. He's world class. But his touch is basically Sunday league. I mean, every time the ball went to him, it just broke down. Every good move broke down. My book just says Werner laughable, Werner.
If you want to talk laughable.
In the end, he played all right. Yeah. Well, go on then.
Well, I said it last Friday. I said it on Monday. And you just get sick of repeating yourself. Just when you think it can't get any worse, it gets worse. One of the other, blaming the referee. I blame Eric Dyer for playing as Alan said this morning, it was playground stuff, you know, kicking away while you're lying on the ground, hoping no one's going to go over your leg. It was ridiculous. One of the products, I think, of there being no crowd there is that the chairman probably doesn't know the full extent of the bad feeling at the moment. Because I take it he doesn't spend much time on social media. I'd advise him not to at the moment, by the way. Don't do that. Don't pick it up now. Don't get a Twitter account, Daniel. Not a good time. But Jose would have turned on the crowd by now because the guys behind the dugout would be telling him what they think. And by now, he couldn't resist it. He'd be digging out the fans in press conferences. He'd be turning around with the three fingers, shouting respect. And it would have got far more toxic. As it stands, I don't think that the chairman can see the strength of feeling. But, I mean, that was pitiful. The first half is one of the worst first half I've seen by Tottenham. And, you know, I have been going since 1968, which is quite shocking. And it's also gotten, a lot of people have been saying, it's all about Tadarius to do in the Tottenham way. It's not about the Tottenham way. If you're used to watching bad football and you were served up that would be on another level. I mean, he's making Tony Pulis look like Rhinus Michaels. I mean, it's putrid.
I don't really get it. I said to you, didn't I, last night? I don't understand it because whenever Spurs go on the front foot, they look a much better team. It's the way they played under Poch. It's what they're set up to do. And the second half, they were far, far better than they were in the first half. And the same in the Cup game where Chelsea dominated until suddenly Spurs decided, no, we're going to take Chelsea on. I don't get it. The players obviously prefer to play like that. you know, with passion and energy and pressing, and they want to see, they obviously don't want to sit back. But when he moans and says, you know, oh, it was the wrong sort of penalty to give, well, it's still a penalty. It doesn't matter what sort of penalty it was.
Honestly, for a guy of his experience who tells us how much he's won in the game, quite rightly, he should be ashamed to send a team out onto the field under his control seconds after they've left his dressing room and he's sent them off telling them what to do. He should be ashamed that they put that performance in for the... It wasn't a lot better in the second half. They ran around a bit more, but beyond that they didn't create anything. Always the last 5 minutes, the old KB scramble in the last 5 minutes where they might nick one, but the margins are so tight then, you know, you've got to be lucky. Yeah, Vinicius should have scored, but it was about the only chance he really had in the game. And I listening to the guys on BT last night, and that feeling, Steve Sidwell saying Tottenham fans will be placated if they win a League Cup. With Tottenham finished 12th and win a League Cup, which is quite possible at the moment, if they turn it on, if they get a bit spawny against City. But that's not a good season. I mean, I wouldn't... I mean, basically, the League Cup is Manchester City's hors d'oeuvre, isn't it? It's their petty fours. That's what they get... I mean, it's because people just turn around and say...
I think petty fours come after.
Oh, sorry, okay. I'm ranting now.
Sorry to be...
I meant to say they're amused bouche. I was going French. I just got on the other end of the meal. I can't wait for this particular meal to end. But no, and also, get used to life without Harry Kane, Spurs. I think we're going to have to, aren't we? Because he must be looking at that thinking, oh, dear, really? If he finishes 12th and wins a League Cup winner's medal, is he going to think, well, this is me for life, can I sign a new 5-year contract?
It is
absolutely shambolic, and I have no great confidence with West Brom coming at the weekend. West Brom will be organised, and they will be looking to get a result. There's so much riding on it, and all the things that Tottenham aren't at the moment. So
do you see the Zoom fans have gone? The Zoom fans have gone from the stadium. That's
they'd be giving Jose the old Nescafe handshake. That's why, which doesn't really look good on the big screens, does it? But it is awful, and they're so lucky there's no fans there. The players. I mean, it might actually help them. I think the players would get on the front foot because they'd sense that in the stadium. But I think once the chairman realizes that maybe there's 35,000 people rattling around there, because I mean, for example, if I was going to games at the moment, I'd be thinking, do I really want to go on Sunday? Can I be bothered? If it's going to be snowing, it's going to be pouring with rain, do I want to sit in the stadium and watch that? I mean, is that because it's supposed to be entertainment, but not at the moment. Anyway, you should be happy because it was it could have been 3 or 4-0.
Well, how do the same players? I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's all about new. All right, I think this guy knows what he's doing and he's changed the system slightly, but the players are so much more enthusiastic. They're working so much harder. It's really old footballers are odd, aren't they? If they don't like the manager, if they don't believe in what they're being told,
we're all up for a bit of new manager uplift.
probably right. Actually.
Max is a devil. Max Rushton, he's saying, give it Moussa Saïd to the end of the season. I think it was me being daft yesterday saying, give it to Ledley to the end of the season.
He was so competitive yesterday on that.
Oh, he is. I've never seen such a game face. He was in a. He was in a trance-like state with a birthday spread. A very competitive boy, clearly.
But he clearly has missed the whole point of the thing, which is my terrible jokes.
No, I think he'll tune in.
Didn't even listen.
He'll tune
and
in.
And Jeff
next
Peters
week.
With his sound effects. Is anything worse than comedy sound effects? You're honestly. Well, that'll have to go as well. But we can't be doing
bit
with
on
that.
Air editing. The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Now, a couple of things to get you going on. It is true. All-Star Sumo apparently has been pitched to Channel 4.
Yes.
And they put a heavy pencil through it. They seem very interested. It's not going to happen in Japan. Apparently, it's going to take this. I mean, it actually was, wasn't it? It was one of the ideas that Alan Partridge came up with all those years ago. It's going to be taking part in a specially made camp in Yorkshire, which screams sumo to me and all the great traditions of it. I don't know about you.
Yeah, of course. Oh, very much so, yeah.
Yeah, and a group of celebrities will be transformed into sumo wrestlers. They'll eat high-calorie... They're not going to wear fat suits. It's not like comedy sumo. They're going to eat high-calorie diets and they'll go through strict daily routines, including training, like building lower body strength.
Great opportunity for some of the people from The Chase.
Yeah. Well, so I was going to say, we don't just want fat gags, everybody. We want some proper celebrity matchups. We're going to look at the tail of the tape. So who would you like to see go head-to-head in celebrity sumo? Apparently, there aren't going to be women in it. I mean, it's not the great tradition of that, of course, in Japan. So there will be women involved. So let's have some celebrity matchups for All-Star Sumo coming to a TV near you soon. And I was chatting to Bob just before we came on here, Bob Mills, and he made that point that what the apprentices in the world of sumo, one of their very, very early jobs is a kind of ceremonial wiping of the backside of the established...
Really?
Sumo wrestlers, yeah. That is one of these ceremonial things they're expected to do. I can see a lot. I think that could be a deal breaker for the agent. Well, they want you to do All-Star Sumo. It's $80,000, but you will need to wipe someone's bum. Hello. But yeah.
So anyway. I don't know, for $80,000, yeah. I mean.
Make it 90, I'll do it. So anyway... Jeff Hurst said today, first time in his life yesterday, he got stuck in a lift. Never happened to him before. He said, took lockdown to extremes yesterday, got stuck in the lift, first time ever, and I've been in a few lifts in my time. Who hasn't?
Well, who hasn't?
When the lift company called my wife to let her know I was safe, was she concerned? No, she laughed and asked if they could leave me there.
Was
his
foot over the line where the door closed?
I do wonder, whoever was in that lift with him just stopped it and said, you're not leaving here until I know whether it was over the line or not. I need to know. So the stars, whether you've necessarily been stuck in a lift with them, or indeed shared a lift with him. You've got your Ricky Ponting story, haven't you, Andy? In India, where you got in a lift with Ricky Ponting. And
He was in a bad mood.
He didn't give you a lot, did he? Didn't give you a lot.
No. No, he was in a very bad mood for some reason. And
He's Ricky Ponting.
I didn't mention Gary Pratt or anything like that. Yeah. I don't know why he got so angry with me, but there you go.
So anyway, let us know, in a lift with the stars, because you are kind of duty-bound to start a bit of small talk, aren't you?
Yes.
So if you indulge in that and it got a bit eggy, do let us know.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Maybe Ricky Ponting heard about Andy's encounter with Gary Player and was worried he might try and shake his hand, says Andy.
It's very true.
That story came up yesterday when we spoke to Danny Kelly about the Gary Player My Sporting Life. Dirty Andy. Christopher Biggins versus Ray Winston, celebrity sumo matchup from Chris. Quite a nice idea. The Moose versus Big Allen, says Dave in Manchester. I think we'd all like to see that. Sharing
that
lifts with
good.
The stars. I once shared a busy hotel lift with the Birmingham City players, including Kevin Phillips. I'd had a few beers and ended up stumbling slightly and treading on his foot. Everyone held their breath for a few moments, but luckily the next floor was mine. He played the following day's game, so there couldn't have been any long-lasting damage, says Richard the Ipswich. Imagine that, putting Kevin Phillips out for a couple of weeks with a metatarsal. Anyway, keep those coming. Jeff Hurst got caught in a lift for the first time in his life yesterday. He was telling us on social media. So encounters with the stars in lifts, if you were stuck in them, even better. Or odd lift lineups, whether you had a chat or not, as we heard of one earlier on, was Chelsea fan Spencer Wolf from Gladiator. And who was the other one? I've forgotten already. It's not going particularly well, is it? Wolf and Gladiator. Melvin Bragg. What was that conversation like if they'd been stuck there for 3 hours?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
From tomorrow, kicking off, of course, with our commentary game, Aston Villa versus Arsenal, there'll be concussion subs in the Premier League. We'll also see them in the FA Cup midweek as well. It's a bit of controversy around the way it's been adopted by IFAB, the football's rulemakers. But before we move on to that, we'll look at how it's going to work. It involves green and white cards being handed to fourth officials from members of club staff. Sam Peters joins us, who's a journalist and a man who's an expert in this field. Good afternoon, Sam.
Afternoon, guys. How you doing?
Good, thank you. Before we look at the people that think it should be different, let's kind of look at the way it is going to work. These are going to be permanent concussion subs, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, yeah. As you mentioned, the card system that will be in place. But, essentially, if a player is suspected of having a concussion or the doctors on the field see that they believe that they're seeing signs of a possible concussion, then they're removed permanently from the field of play. And a green and white card system implemented to that effect. And each team will be allowed 2 concussion substitutes, no more than that. And when one team does take a player off with concussion, then the opposition team will be able to make a substitution at the same time to avoid any sort of suggestion or allegation that one team's getting an unfair advantage in any way. But it's an interesting development, obviously.
Sorry, Sam, do they have to make that substitution at the same time? Do they have to make that decision are they given a card that they can use later on in the game, or do they have to make it at that point as soon as the concussion substitution is made?
I think you're right in saying it can be made at any point from
right.
that point.
Okay.
But, it enables the team that option to have an additional substitute, essentially.
It seems, Sam, quite controversial that the doctors have got up to 10 minutes to decide if a player should be replaced. And we all know the pressure on a star player if he's off the field and the team are down to 10 men. I just wonder why they didn't bring in temporary substitutes. Then a player can be assessed, and if he can come back, and then he can come back and the sub come off. It would have been much safer.
Well, that's what FIFPro have been pushing for, and that is the controversy, isn't it, Sam? What's your take on it?
Well, I'm confused as well. I don't really understand myself. I mean, the Premier League have said that they believe that this is the safest way. I mean, you have to look, I guess, at rugby, which is the sport that's moved before the other ones on this issue, because many people would argue it's got a more significant problem. But in rugby, you're allowed to essentially take the player off for a 10-minute assessment off the pitch. It's a head injury assessment, it's called now. And they're given that breathing space off the field, away from the sort of glare that doctors, it takes the pressure off the doctors, because they can make decisions away from the glare of the sort of, you know, the live audience as such, whether that be on TV or in the actual crowd in the days where you're allowed crowds, of course. But it feels strange to me, why they wouldn't just implement something similar in rugby. It seems to have worked fairly effectively there, but, that's the decision they've made.
I was wondering if it was a fear of skullduggery with temporary replacement. So a player has a concussion issue, they go off to be assessed temporarily. You put someone on who scores two goals in that 10 minutes and you think, well, yeah, it definitely was concussion. He can't come back on now. That right back who was having a mare. I mean, you hate to be cynical, but there has been a lot of talk about the way that this could be manipulated.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to say, like those of us who followed concussion story in sport for quite a long time, going well over a decade now, we talk about Groundhog Day, and this is exactly the sort of pickle that rugby got itself in early on in the discussion around concussion and whether they were going to implement substitutes. A number of the listeners remember a scenario which was termed Bloodgate back in the day, and that was when teams were using blood capsules to essentially cheat the blood substitution rules and bring on players. And, rugby spent ages to-ing and fro-ing and worrying about whether there was going to be some sort of manipulation of the rules rather than actually look at the best policy and best practice for the players in order to implement the player welfare initiative. And I've got to say, looking at this, it smacks of the same thing. It seems like there's as much time being talked about whether the actual substitutions could be cheated or manipulated, or whether opposition managers or coaches would find ways around it, rather than go, what's in the best interest of the players? And then we'll work backwards from there and make sure it can be enforced and policed properly. And if teams try and cheat it, then they're properly, they're punished appropriately.
Yeah.
But it seems to be a bit back to front, I must admit.
Yeah, certainly, finally, Sam, at the core of this is good, isn't it? It's been a long time coming, and it's important, as we saw with Raul Jimenez recently, and he's not the only one, just how dangerous this can be. And, it's about time this was in place in football.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a big picture, it's a step forward, definitely. I think, again, we can argue, and many of us have for a very, very long time, it's taken an extraordinary amount of time to get here. But it's a step in the right direction. There's no doubt about it. And football is more aware of the issue. More people in football are aware of the issue. The people who've always been aware of the issue but were just ignored for a long time are being listened to more than they have been. And there is progress being made, and that's undeniable, and all the people involved should be applauded for that. As I say, there's just these concerns that they're making some of the same mistakes that other sports have, and let's just put the players' welfare first, make sure that we have fewer people in the future with dementia relating to head injuries, and that's got to be a good thing for everyone.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
My dad, Huey Hamilton, a former Hartlepool United winger, was in Geneva in the airport and got stuck in a lift with Sir Jackie Stewart. He realised who it was, but said nothing. 5 minutes goes by in silence until the lift moves and Jackie gets out. Then my dad, for some reason, shouts, "All right, Jackie!" The great man just stared at him in his tam o'shanter. 5 minutes, they could have had a chat about F1 or whatever else.
What lift ride is 5 minutes?
They were stuck in the lift. It had stopped. Yeah, they could be that building in Chicago. Could have been Sears Tower, whatever they call it these days. This comes from Nolan. Said, myself and my friend Will were stuck in a lift at the Oval with Phil Tufnell, Piers Morgan and Shane Warne. While Phil and Piers were surprisingly chatty and pleasant, Shane spent the whole time in the corner facing the wall like a schoolboy who'd been told off, says Nolan. Yeah, it's a bit
very
weird.
Very strange. Very odd indeed.
Yes, Andy, have you got anything for us?
Yes, and Nigel Pearson, I call this issuing a come-and-get-me plea to Strictly. He says...
This is Nigel, not the Speedway and Darts and football commentator, the former Leicester manager.
Football hard man, as they
Football hard man,
Daily Star today. Mm. Nigel Pearson took part in ballroom dancing as a child.
Nice.
But feared being mocked. I mean, if you're a producer in Strictly, that's the thing you live for, isn't it?
Definitely. A little story like that,
Nigel's definitely... That's a come and get me plea for me.
Imagine Nigel, with one of the judges. You know what he can be like when he gets in one of those moods? You can say, old Craig having a go at him. And he could be doing all that stuff, couldn't he? Some of his infamous rants. He can turn. So I think we'd all love to see that. That would be good.
And this is a mad story. A bloke called Sahil Arora, he won $5,000 after Brighton beat Spurs last Sunday.
Yeah.
He's a Manchester United fan. And he decided to basically place an ad in the Enfield Independent, the local paper at the club's training ground, taking out an ad featuring a message of thanks to the special one and a cutout and trophy being the only one they might win this year. I thought, blimey, that's a bit harsh, really. And these people who do this, they've got no idea about karma of supporting a football team.
No, that's very true.
Honestly, you see, Manchester United, that'll come back
It would have got to the Tottenham fans, and that part of London's got a lot of Arsenal fans as well, so it would have raised the chuckle there. So he would argue that money well spent. Anyway, Kieran Bracken will be joining us very shortly to talk a bit of rugby ahead of the Six Nations. Just one more of these little lift tales. Get some more coming into us, by the way. I was in a lift with Ivy Tildesley, actress Lynn Perry from Coronation Street.
Oh, yeah.
I'd had a few sherbets, says Craig, and when she got in the lift, I asked her why she was down in London. She explained she was doing a PA at Stringfellow's. Of course, her lad, on-screen lad, Chris Quinton, used to work there, didn't he?
Brian
As she
Tilsley.
Left the lift, she gave me a ta-ra, Chuck. Beautiful. Thank you for that, Craig.
There you go. It's nice.
And we've also been asked this afternoon from Roger the Gooner. He says, having converted my missus to your show over the COVID period, but you definitely tuned in today, Roger the Gooner, to listen to this. Certainly the first 15 minutes. She's
and
doing
Spencer.
She's doing my head in as she wants to know the title of your theme tune at the start of the programme. Can you help? Here it is. This is the one we play every day.
That's funny, because we were just talking about the other version, weren't we?
We were. It's called Coffee Pot Part 1, which is a very odd title for a song, by a bloke called B.O. Junior. And you can only imagine what B.O. Senior smells like, as we always say.
Yeah, he stunk the place out.
He certainly did. But there we are, Coffee Pot Part 1 by B.O. Junior. You might find it on Spotify or Apple Music or something.
Why would you be known by your initials? You say, you know,
yeah.
Brian Orville or something.
Brian Orville Junior. That would be... Who's Brian Orville? That's fantastic. That, yeah, good old Brian.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Here he is, King of Overnights. Huge in Ho Chi Minh City.
Massive.
Squad number 9, Martin Kellner with a week of sport on TV. Good afternoon, Martin.
Yeah, good afternoon, boys. And congratulations, Paul. I know it's on Twitter. You've been dubbed a comedy god.
Who by?
I don't know, one of your listeners. Oh, says you're a comedy god.
Oh, okay, something. Well, that's high praise indeed. And not, of course not. I thought you'd say congratulations on the fine performance by your team. I thought I was waiting for that. I wouldn't
well,
blame
my
you.
My team, brilliant. I mean, one of the sights of the week on TV was Jesse
like
Wingard's
West Ham club call this show this afternoon.
Andy's getting quite bitter, I think. Do you know he's got a thing about West Ham? Because they always beat Chelsea, generally,
yes,
don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
They do.
Absolutely.
You'll be certainly watching Celebrity Sumo coming to Channel 4 soon, won't you, Martin?
Oh, not half as brilliant.
That will definitely be in your week of sport on TV, I'd like to think.
It certainly will. It certainly will.
Yeah.
Talking about sports documentaries, you may remember last week I said we're living through something of a golden age for sports documentaries. And the show that start or the film that started the whole thing is currently on BBC iPlayer. They've brought back Hoop Dreams.
Oh, it's very good, yeah.
It's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Because it's its 25th anniversary, which it isn't really. It was made in 1994. The BBC with anniversaries, they just absolutely love them. It's the 25th anniversary of it first being shown in the UK, apparently. And for those, just very briefly, I mean, most people know what Hoop Dreams is all about. It's about two young kids from a sort of deprived area of Chicago. They were picked up by a mainly white school, but a sort of, obviously we know how much sport and education are intertwined in the States. And they're taken from one of Chicago's more deprived areas to, they don't know each other, they're separate stories, these, and they're followed throughout of it. And it doesn't end well. And like all these stories where kids are spotted and maybe going to academies and things like that, or in the States, into high schools, eventually it doesn't end well at all. But I won't spoil it for people. I Googled it all to see if they were still around and everything. They're still around, these kids, but there's been a lot of sort of deprivation, a lot of problems. They've had the gas cut off, which is all that is in the film and everything. It's well worth watching, needless to say. And especially at the moment with, the arguments around Black Lives Matter, which still sort of bubble up from time to time. And I also watched part two, I watched part two of the Tiger Woods documentary, Tiger, where obviously race plays a huge part of that as well. A lot of the time you don't realise, but when you look at the 2010 Masters, the second part of this Tiger Woods documentary covers what I like to call the cocktail waitress years.
And he probably doesn't call them that, Martin.
No, I'm sure he doesn't. I'm sure he doesn't. One of his friends said, and you never realised this at the time, when he played in the 2010 Masters, at Augusta, Billy Payne, who was the chairman of Augusta, came out and did a little... I'd forgotten this. He gave a little speech about welcoming Tiger back into the fold, if you like. But within the speech, there were various sort of elements that you thought, well, this is Augusta. And you look at the history of sort of white privilege at that in that part of the States, and certainly on the golf course at Augusta. And one of Tiger Woods' friends described his welcome back as almost like a public whipping, which, of course, a very sort of emotive term, that part of America. You know, because Billy Payne said, we hope Tiger will see the error of his ways, et cetera, et cetera. And, so it was a fascinating show because, like I say, it was the cocktail years, the cocktail waitress years. And those American chat show hosts are absolutely brutal when anybody, Jay Leno and the... the other guy, Jimmy Fallon.
Yes.
Brutal jokes about Tiger Woods. My favourite actually was a black comedian who was on doing his bit, obviously from a black perspective, about Tiger Woods. He said 50, because at the time the mistresses had been counted up and there was 15 of them. And this guy came on and said 15 women, all white. He doesn't need marriage guidance, he needs diversity training. which is a cracking gag. They interviewed all these people. Rachel Luchatel, who was probably the main figure, who said, Tiger said, when he saw me, he felt he could plug in and get me charged. Not a chat-up line I'd use myself, but there was a lot of interesting stuff about Tiger. The way he sort of compartmentalised his life, and he could, you know, separate one bit of it from the other, and obviously the key thing was golf. And a lot of people said to me, people who are far more interested in golf than I am, that they thought it was unkind to Tiger. It would be interesting to know what your listeners think, because... Mm. I thought it was reasonably fair to Tiger, and there was a certain amount of redemption at the end. You know, when he came back after he'd been, there was the scene of him, the very sad scene, really, when he was out of it on drugs and things. And we've seen the scene in the police room there. Mm. But when he came back and played golf again after that, just playing with his friends after a bit of time off, you thought, well, he sort of rediscovered himself. And obviously he has since then, and, you know, got over the injury problems and all that. So I thought it wasn't particularly unkind towards Tiger, in my view. Okay. But it would be interesting to hear other people's. But my son, who does a golf podcast for one of the well-known high street bookmakers, was saying that he and a lot of people that he knows who are terribly into golf thought it wasn't kind on Tiger.
Okay, interesting.
His win at the Masters last year was one of the ultimate sporting redemptions. I find him a bit, in a way, he's a bit like Jose, that, you know, that when he smiles and when he's charming, he's wonderful, but he can be really off and really surly and angry. And Mourinho's the same. When he smiles, he can charm anybody, he can charm a room. And other times, he just isn't completely the opposite of that. So I suppose it's the genius thing, I suppose.
It is, yeah. And talking of geniuses and not being full of charm at all times, I watched the Lance documentary, which is also part two of the Lance Armstrong documentary, who had a great quote about his book. They were asking him about his autobiography. And he said, everything in the book is true, apart from the bit about doping. I think, well, that's pretty key, actually.
Yeah. It's the crux, really, of the whole thing, isn't it?
It is. It's like saying Bobby Charlton saying everything is true, apart from the stuff about football.
Yeah,
everything else.
It's true.
Absolutely true, yeah. Which was weird. I don't know how much time you've got, but they covered a fair amount of... I know you'll be busy, aren't you, today, with the... with the Super Bowl up and all
we got
that.
We got a couple of minutes, Martin. So a
couple of minutes?
Yes.
Let me tell you about Floyd Landis.
Minute and a half, the producer says.
Minute and a half, right.
We interviewed Floyd Landis, didn't we?
Did you?
No, we didn't. No, no.
He was one of Tyler. Yeah,
Hamilton.
Tyler
interviewed.
He was one of the others. Yeah, they had interviews on this Lance program with most of those teammates. But I thought you might be interested to know that Floyd Landis lives in Leadville, Colorado.
Leadville,
Colorado. What does that sound like?
It's like a made-up name, isn't it? Really?
No. Well, you get the shot of it. Mm. He runs a saloon there now in Leadville, Colorado, which is Leadville's legendary Wild West Saloon. And on the side of it is painted, on the side of the saloon is painted, the best Wild West saloon in America. I don't know what goes on in a Wild West saloon, but I suppose they slide the, you know, it's two fingers of red eye and all that, isn't it?
But here's James Finlayson behind the bar. Course,
like, yes, oh yes, absolutely. There's one for the teenagers.
Look him up, kids. Ask your great granddad.
Indeed, yeah. Floyd Landis is probably Lance's premier enemy that they interview. Although a lot of people aren't that close friends with him these days. Floyd Landis's quote was: "Lance is very good at lying, better than he is at telling the truth." And there's a lot
much of
that
a compliment,
stuff.
Really.
No, he's very good at light. But we have, you know, Emma O'Reilly, Betsy Andrew, a lot of the people who've been, you know, obviously spoke to David
Sawn
Walsh.
Off by him, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and David Walsh was on the programme as well.
Yeah.
Well worth watching. Oh, it's highly entertaining for the incidental details.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is a nice one from Danny in West Sussex. He said, I was a minder for a Shrek mascot at a Shrek film premiere in Leicester Square. As we travelled to the ground floor to reach the green carpet in a very, very small lift, it stopped en route. The doors opened to reveal none other than the voice of Shrek, Mike Myers. I was then, for the next few seconds, squeezed in the lift with the Shrek mascot, Mike, me as the meat in the sandwich. Trying to fill the inevitable silence, I could only find the sentence to say to Mike, "Guess you two know each other?" To which he replied, "Yep." Conversation over. Cringe.
Oh, nice.
Says Danny. Nice one here from Adam. He says, I was stuck in a lift with Klaus-Jan Huntelaar and didn't know how to break the ice. I ended up inviting him to play for Villa. And he said in a fairly dry way, my friend Ron Vlaar plays there. Conversation killed, says Adam. Another one here of a lift engineer for many years, Mick. And he's got a tale of not just meeting Sven, but also at the Chelsea Harbour Hotel when he was fixing that Jimmy Floyd Hasselblank tripping over as he walked into the lift. I've seen him go down easily in a 3-2 win at the lane when he got a penalty when he fell over his own feet, which I haven't quite forgiven him for.
I remember that one.
Yeah, that was incredible, wasn't it? That was the days before VAR. It's like Norman Wisdom, and he got a penalty, and he won 3-2. And just one quick one. This is a good one. Alistair says, I'm a former journalist and once went to interview Jeremy Beadle of Game for a Laugh fame in his flat. After the interview, the lift of the ground floor stopped between floors, and I immediately thought he'd set me up and there were cameras in there. That was until the firefighters arrived, he said.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
I think we've kind of got used to programme ideas, taking it even further than Alan Partridge did when he sat opposite Tony Hayes, the BBC commissioning editor, and started pitching ideas. Now, it's a comedy legend, of course. You may remember this idea he pitched.
Inner city sumo.
What's that?
We take fat people from the inner cities, put them in big nappies, and then get them to throw each other out of a circle that we draw with chalk on the ground.
No, it's a bad idea.
Very cheap to make. Do it in a pub car park.
No.
If you don't do it, Sky work.
Well, I'll live with that.
Now, of course, that would have led to celebrity inner city sumo had they ever got made, because that's how TV works. So they've taken the inner city side out of it, but apparently all-star sumo is coming to Channel 4, according to the papers today. We wonder what our man on the non-sporting telly, Mike Ward, makes of that. Good afternoon, Mike.
I've got my entry in.
I mean, it seems incredible and unlikely, but they're going to use all the great traditions of sumo, which means they're making it in Yorkshire. And it's not going to be people in fat suits. It will be a group of celebrities who are transformed into sumo wrestlers, eating high-calorie diets, going through strict daily routines, including training and building their lower body strength, apparently.
Mrs. Ward is going to love that. Because, you know, it's hard enough getting to watch The Masked Singer. But she doesn't seem to understand. This is glorious stuff. It makes my job so easy.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound healthy though. You know, the fact that you've got to put you take an already person who's already quite overweight. And they said, "No, you've got to be more overweight."
Well, the life expectancy of sumo wrestlers isn't. I mean, you don't want to really put them. And also, it's the kind of great tradition. It's almost a sort of semi-religious experience. Sumo. Yeah. The idea of it being sort of stuck on the telly for everybody's entertainment sort of does sort of fly. Bob Mills was reminding us earlier on, one of the jobs he was telling me of, the young apprentice sumo wrestlers in a kind of ceremonial thing when you're at the very bottom of the rung, is to wipe the backside at some point of one of the top guys. Which, I mean, so, you know, if that phone call goes into Ryland wouldn't do it now.
Kleenex will be happy though. <wouldn't>
they could be the sponsor. But that call goes in, you know, it's 80 grand, but you've got to wipe someone's backside. I mean, then make it 85 and I'll do it. I mean, we'll all watch it, Mike. We'll watch the first one.
Series link. That's a series link. And ultimately, you know, where's David Tony Haynes now? You know, he was sat there dismissing all these ideas, and you know, he disappeared.
They could have all been on the BBC. We'll talk Brighton at the end. Let's talk a bit of telly. And it's the last in the series of Not Going Out Tonight.
Yeah.
And it's a tribute to the late great Bobby Ball as well. Lee's dad, of course.
That's right. He played Lee's dad, Frank. He's been playing, I didn't realise it, since 2009. So 12 years he's done it. And it was, obviously the series went out and it was, you know, just playing the series out as a tribute. And it's just a nice touch at the end. It's just a couple of minutes, clips of the stuff that he's done and just some of his sort of famous, most memorable scenes done in a fairly nicely understated way, you know, and to our friend, you know, in memory of our friend Bobby, which is done. But also you get to see Lee Mack, you know, back in those early episodes, because of course, as we said before, Not Going Out has evolved quite a lot.
Mm.
And without the beard, you know.
All right.
Yeah.
The episode in this series with Bobby Ball was excellent. It was one of the best. Really good.
Yeah, I just think he brought something to it, and he clearly revelled in the role, didn't he? He revelled playing in the sort of despicable dad, and, you know, and I think they bounced off each other.
Yeah. I was saying last night, I've never seen a whole Death in... I couldn't eat a whole one. I've never seen a whole Death in Paradise.
Bizarrely, yeah, it's a two-parter tonight, and the reason the second or two-parter tonight. And the reason I mention it is because Ben Miller, who played the lead detective on the island until I think it was 2014, D.I. Richard Poole, got killed off. He makes a reappearance tonight. I'm not allowed to say under what circumstances. Oh. I think, you know, anybody who's watched TV for more than about 2 years of their life can pretty much figure it out in their head how it's going to happen. But anyway, but Mrs. We watched the first episode. Mrs. Well, really? Well, you don't think. You know,
we love Death in Paradise. We're big fans.
Well, interestingly enough, I hadn't realised that Mrs. Ward is more of a fan than I realised, because we watched the first one last night. She said, have you got the second episode? I said, well, I've got it, but it's on the preview site and I have to sort of hook it up no, let's watch it. And I'm thinking, you're normally asleep by now. You know, and she was genuinely hooked. So something about it, you know.
I just think it comes up at the right time of year when you're feeling a bit down and the weather's terrible, and it's fun.
It's an old fashioned, ultimately, yes, exactly. It's an old fashioned murder mystery with a nice setting.
Really. So, 9 o'clock tonight, BBC One, and Not Going Out 8:05. Tomorrow night, a rerun of the series with Keely Hawes at the Line of Duty, which was a very, very good series. That's BBC One, 9 o'clock.
That's right, yeah, because obviously we've got the new series coming to us before too long. Everybody's very excited about that, but they've been playing some of the old ones again, and Keely Hawes is almost unrecognisable. It wasn't as obviously Keely Hawes, but you know, she played totally out of character. We're used to seeing her, you know, from the Durrells or from Finding Alice, playing a certain type of character, although she's obviously done other stuff, but this is the most extreme sort of dark, ambiguous character that I've ever seen her play, and it's a really, really good series. And you are, as with Line of Duty, always you're kind of guessing all the way through, and then sort of, you know, being led down all sorts of cul-de-sacs plot-wise. But it's brilliant. So if you haven't seen it, and people who are catching up, it's a great series.
Yeah, BBC One, 9 PM tomorrow night. Masked Singer before that. I know you're a big fan. It was big last week. Fan. Lenny Henry and Morton Harkett
together
were
at last.
Unmasked.
Yep, yep. Yes. A double unmasking. Matt Lucas joins the panel for this next one tomorrow night. So it's getting tense.
Yeah.
people love it, don't they? I've never seen it.
Do you want to hazard a guess at someone who's in one of the suits? Have you worked it out, and Mrs. Ward?
I'm pretty sure I guessed Lenny Henry a few weeks ago, but, you know, that I could have just dreamt that. You know, it's possible.
And surprisingly, I suppose, with the virus and the fact that ice dancing is dangerous, people have been dropping out of dancing on ice on Sunday night.
And
Matt
so
Richardson, who has stepped in for Rufus Hound, we understand.
Yeah, Rufus Hound tested positive for COVID, so he's had to sit it out. And Matt Richardson, I don't know how many people, I think they're allowed up to 5 subs now in one series. I don't know how many people they've got on standby, but it could be a completely different cast.
Yeah, they need concussion subs, don't they? Definitely. They definitely need them on Dancing on Ice.
COVID subs, concussion subs, broken ankle subs. I mean, it's a hazardous show at the best of times, apart from all that, you know, the cold, but don't get me started.
I see that Sheridan Smith, who's a brilliantly talented singer and actress, is presenting another show. I'm watching Pooch Perfect and quite enjoying, but I don't think she's the greatest presenter you've ever seen in your life, so I don't know what this is like.
Well, this is basically
Everyone's a critic.
Well, it's true. I've just said she's a brilliant singer and an actress.
She is a very good singer. I mean, I think she's just, you know, it's Sheridan Smith and people sort of like her and she can sing really well.
That sounds like a show in itself. It's Sheridan Smith. It's Sheridan. Mike Ward came up with the idea and I couldn't say no. We laughed, we cried, sketches, songs from the shows. I can get that away, I think, Mike. I think there's something there. It's Sheridan, like the old Silla shows. Anyway, somebody's just written that down to make a few quid and cut me out of it. We've got to give you a few seconds on Brighton, haven't we? Hasn't it going well?
Oh, it's. Do you know what? I've found out, I've got to be 100% honest with you, I didn't watch the Liverpool match.
Really?
You
have little faith.
I put on Celebrity Best Home Cook.
Well, I think we're all duty bound to leave it there. And send your season ticket back to Paul Barber.
Absolutely.
We'll catch up with you next week, Mike.
Cheers, guys.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. Andy's back with me on Monday. We'll pour over all the Premier League games and the Six Nations and the Super Bowl and lots more besides. And, of course, Max will be with me Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday with Andy returning on Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.